Hey everybody, and welcome to the Meddling Kids Podcast, a review of all things Scooby-Doo. I forgot what I was going to say.
You were going to say your name.
Oh, I was? Okay, I had like one of those witty intros.
Oh, never mind.
Oh, I blew it. I'm Stephen Pappas. I'm no good.
And I'm Julie Kinn. I'm mediocre. Today we're talking about A Clue for Scooby-Doo. This is the third episode of Scooby-Doo, Where Are You?
Yes.
And I have a question for you, Stephen, before we begin.
I'm very excited.
Because I'm a little worried about offending you this episode. How religious are you?
Actively or?
Like, if I started spouting off about Christian theology in this episode a little bit later on, will that be okay with you?
You can do that. That will not offend me in the least.
Okay. Keep in mind, I'm Jewish. So, like, this is stuff I learned on Wikipedia.
Okay.
Well, okay. So
I know I grew up Christian, so whether or not I practice too much is different now. But I'll kind of, if I hear something that I'm like, that's not right, I'll jump in.
Yeah. Or even more important, I mean, I'm okay being wrong. I'm more concerned about offending our listeners.
Right.
So if you hear something, you're like, no, Julie, just let me know, okay? Because this episode, A Clue for Scooby-Doo, I developed this huge theory, and I think I might have told you before, I watched these episodes with my friend Terry, and I tried to get him to buy into my theory, and he just very politely was like, that's a theory. So, I don't know. I might be way off the mark.
I'm excited to hear your theory, because you texted me, and you were like, I have a theory, and I was like, okay.
Yes. Like, okay. This episode is about the conflict between manifest destiny and Karl Marx's dictatorship of the proletariat.
Okay, I'm stupid, so I'm going to need you to break that down for me.
Well, I, like I mentioned, am fresh off of Wikipedia, so let me help you out here. So Manifest Destiny, and for our folks like Matt Taran, who sent in questions last time, and our very educated Scooby listeners, forgive me for my dumbed-down approach here. Manifest Destiny is the idea that if God likes you, or if you believe in God, then you're going to do great. And that's not it.
That's prosperity gospel.
Right.
Manifest destiny is the idea of we were decreed by God to move across the country and claim land for our own in the 1800s.
Oh, is it? I thought manifest destiny.
That's the historical. That's the historical aspect of it. I don't know if it has a different word meaning now.
No. I'm talking historical. I don't think people still buy into this stuff. Well, maybe on Fox News or something. I thought manifest destiny was like, if there is a king, then just assume that king is there because God wants the king to be there.
I think that's like maybe predestination and prosperity gospel kind of mixed together, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
Because prosperity gospel is that idea of like, if you do good and God loves you, he'll make you rich. And if you're poor, you're doing something wrong. Like,
okay,
so then that sounds kind of similar.
This episode is about prosperity gospel versus Karl Marx's dictatorship of the proletariat. And that idea is that the proletariat, the working class, need to rise up and throw off our bourgeois, proletariat in Karl Marx's Russia, and throw off the shackles of the bourgeois and the upper class. So in this episode, and I'll get back to this with all of my stunning plot points, but in this episode we start off learning about a proletariat guy who was killed due to the bourgeois and upper class, and how a ghost resulted from this. But then by the end of the episode, there's some issues there. Okay, not everything is as it seems. So
I think
I'll
took this way more at face value than you did. I was like, oh, look, ships and boats and people. Like,
Well, I was really caffeinated when I was watching this. And like I said, Terry, who's smarter than me, was like, meh. So anyway, okay, shall I get into the episode rundown?
Let's do it.
Okay. Guess what the weather's like?
I bet it's dark and kind of hazy and, you know, all that good stuff. Just like every episode of Scooby-Doo.
Yes, there's a creepy moon. It's night and there's fog everywhere. And so it's the perfect time for a beach party.
Of course. That's when you go to the beach, is at night. It's not when sharks feed or anything like that.
Exactly. When sharks feed. Oh my gosh, I love it. As though sharks aren't also around in daytime. But anyway, we before we see the Scooby Gang, we see some glowing footsteps along the beach, but then they get washed away by waves.
Which will be important later to my point that I need to make about how ridiculous this show is. But go on.
What? Ridiculous?
I know.
Steven.
I know. That's a hot take.
We then see a glowing dude in an old-timey scuba suit, also covered in seaweed. And he is like, wow, 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 kind of glowing.
Sure.
If that sound effects makes any sense.
Yes, he's very radioactive.
Yes, yes. Okay, thank you for saying that. That's kind of what I was thinking, too. And then later in the episode, I get really concerned about contamination, but we'll get into that. All right, we see a sign for Rocky Point Beach because, of course, nothing in this series has names like Happy Cove. I mean, it's all like the worst names. Seriously, sure. Someone needs to go through and do some A/B usability testing on these branding. So they say this is a groovy place for a beach party, and the kids, you know, come up. So here I was thinking it's possible that this is not night, but that they live someplace with a lot of air pollution, like Beijing. Right? Because it's always foggy, and I don't know. Anyway, something to consider. Do you remember what Shaggy is planning on cooking for everybody?
I do, because I wrote down, yeah, I'd try that. He's making chocolate-covered hot dogs?
Chocolate-covered hot dogs!
And I have no shame, because I was just like, okay, yeah. Why not?
I would try it once.
Yeah. I'd probably try it once and be like, you know, I don't like it, but I'll have more.
If Shaggy cooked it for you, I think you would probably want to try it.
Oh, of course. It's some sort of edible if he cooked it for you, so.
Right, exactly. Last time, the sardine and marshmallow sandwich, would you have tried that?
I'm really freaked out by sardines because you eat them like bone and all, but I've heard they're really good. So I don't know how to feel. I have feelings and I don't know how to process them.
All right. I also have never tried that. We'll need to get Chris, your co-host from Is This Adulting, to rate all of these different meals on a scale of 1 to 10 of which he would be likely to try because he is very picky.
None of them. Okay. Nope, never.
I'm going to make him chocolate covered hot dogs someday.
Cool.
But we won't tell him what's in it. It'll just look like some sort of chocolate candy bar. And oh then there's like...
He does love hot dogs. Oh my God. He'd probably like it.
Okay, one way to find out, right?
Exactly.
Okay, then we see Fred and Daphne dancing. And to me, Daphne looks like she's doing the Running Man.
Sure.
Yeah. Scooby is a great surfer. They're doing all the beach party stuff, except for Velma. We don't see where Velma is. Scooby's surfing, Shaggy's
sure,
cooking.
Sure, classic beach party stuff, like dog surfing. I mean...
Dude, if you saw a dog surfing at a beach party, that would be the story you told for the rest of your life.
You know there's video out there somewhere on the internet, on YouTube, of a dog surfing. You know it's happened.
We're going to have to Google that later, for sure. Yep. Doggies on skateboards, I've seen many a time.
Oh, yeah.
That's a commonplace.
With sunglasses and scarves.
Oh, yes, exactly. All right. So then we get to something that we have to add to our known canon of Scooby-Doo. Because Scooby's surfing, and as you do when you're surfing, he's got his paws under the water. And then with his paw, he has opposable thumbs. No, I am positive of it.
Sure.
Because last time, I forget what he was holding with his opposable
thumb. Rabbit.
A rabbit, thank you. And a wand, right?
Yes.
This time, he holds straws in this episode, but even more importantly, with his paw, he's able to pull out of the water a full-grown human, we presume, in a scuba suit, in an old-timey scuba suit. It is our glowing phosphorescent dude, and so Scooby is very scared, of course.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I would be too. Like, imagine, one, I hate the beach anyway, because just the beach is the worst, because there are things in the water that want me dead. But imagine you're at the beach, and you pull up a full-grown man. Maybe he has a scuba suit, maybe he doesn't. And he's just like, hi, I'm Gary. And, like, the first question is, like, what you doing under there, Gary? Like,
right.
Yeah.
Were you looking at my paws?
I do refer to my hands as paws, so that makes sense.
I was thinking of you as Skibby. I'm sorry. I sometimes do that.
I kind of am, so.
Okay. As we established on our first episode. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen, like, from the water view, a dog's paws in the water? It's super cute. Anyway. Okay. So, Scooby's really scared. He runs back to the beach, jumps on Shaggy, who's just finished cooking, and points to the glowing scuba dude. Shaggy at this point is really scared. He hides in a giant beach umbrella behind a rock, which sure. I've got to say, I thought that was a pretty good place to hide. Like, you want evasive maneuvers when you see a threat. Now, all the other kids here kind of bothered me because they were less concerned with running and hiding or finding some method of defense and more concerned with making Shaggy get out of his hiding place.
Well, they need the umbrella for the beach party, so I mean,
of course. Priorities. Okay, yeah, all right, it all makes sense. So they're like, and Shaggy's like, did you guys see that? And Fred says, oh yeah, I saw it, and guess what? We're going back.
He wants to investigate. God, Fred.
What do you think his theory is here? That, like, people aren't allowed to glow?
I think his theory is like, okay, well, if we go after them, I can kill them all and blame it on this radioactive swimmer man.
Oh, that's a really good point. Okay,
I'm concerned for the gang. Every episode, I'm concerned for the gang.
Every episode, seriously. Yeah, especially Velma in this episode, which I'll get to in a bit. Okay, mm-hmm. So they go back to investigate, but they don't see him anymore. Now it's just like a glowing puddle of glowy stuff in the water. So there's nothing there. And all of a sudden, it's daytime. I have 4 exclamation points in my notes because it's the first time in the series so far that we've seen sunlight.
That's true. I didn't even think about that. I was so focused on the idea of, like, you know, here's an idea. Get in the van and leave.
Right.
Like,
right.
Why do you need to invest in, well, let's go see this creepy old pirate man. Like, no, why don't you just, like, get in the van and peace out? Like, you don't, not your problem. This is not your problem.
Not your problem. Exactly. Well, they do go to a malt shop, which I love because it's such a nice period thing.
Right.
But also because that's a safe place, right? There's grown-ups there. There's a phone you could use to phone the police if you felt like police needed to investigate a glowing scuba dude. Okay, Shaggy and Scooby are drinking from a huge shake. It's gigantic. Like, it looks like a big gulp. And they both have 2 straws, which I got a kick out of because that's how my kids always want to drink from if they ever go to a restaurant and there's straws. For some reason, both of them think 2 straws is, like, the best.
No, did you ever do that? Like, no, that's my milkshake. Like, you get your own milkshake. Like, I'm not sharing.
Oh, no, I didn't mean they shared. I just meant that, like, in their own cups of water.
Okay.
Or whatever.
Yeah, okay.
They both
need
2 straws.
I've done that. I've done that for sure.
Maybe it's kid logic of, like, I will get the thing in my head faster if I suck it up out of 2 straws. Okay. So, yeah, 2 is always better than 1. But Shaggy and Scooby are definitely into sharing slobber and stuff. And so they share this big gulp.
Sure.
They're reading the newspaper and they see boat mysteriously disappears. And then there's an interview, and these kids read newspapers, I guess. Well, is this I almost said, is this before television? Gosh, I'm an idiot this morning.
Well,
obviously, it's not before television. Because
it was a television show.
Right. Maybe it's like Happy Days, and it's a television show made about a time period like 20 years previously.
You know, I don't get a 1940s vibe from the Scooby Gang. Especially the fact that they're driving, like, the hippie van and not some sort of horseless carriage.
You know, this is why I got my PhD, so I can say really dumb stuff once in a while. But
you're,
like,
a doctor. Like,
but I'm a doctor.
Like, I'm a doctor.
Right, exactly. I'm book smart, but, like, not even that, apparently. Okay. So, yes. They're reading a newspaper. And there's an interview in this article with local weirdo Ebenezer Shark. Which is the best name ever. Ebenezer Shark.
Was it Shark?
I think so. What
I thought
do you
it was
think
Sharp.
It was?
Like, with a P. Which is less cool. I want your version. As Ebenezer Shark. That sounds way cooler.
It does, but Ebenezer Sharp sounds more like a name. Okay, Ebenezer Shark. Which, yeah. I'm going to name my next album that. tunes from Ebenezer Shark, if I was a musician. All right. And Ebenezer Shark claims in this article that the boats are mysteriously disappearing due to the ghost of Captain Cutler. In my notes, I wrote down Captain, all caps, C-A-P-T, in like the Navy captain way. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing he's a retired naval officer.
I'm sure. Right. And this is the point in my notes where I just wrote, hey, I bet the culprit is Ebenezer Sharp.
Yeah, but you would be wrong because it's Ebenezer Shark.
Shark, sorry. There you go. Yeah, this is when I wrote down, like, I wrote down literally, bet it's Ebenezer Shark, and then, oh yeah, definitely this guy.
Yeah, because when they meet him, of course, Velma tries to impress Fred here. She's like, let's go pay him a visit tonight, which is totally a Fred thing to say, but Velma's trying to get cool points.
Why go out there at night?
Right, right, exactly. I mean, this is why I said I'm concerned about Velma. Fred is a really bad influence. In this whole episode, she's embracing her inner Fred. And it's all just this plea for attention, I think.
Oh, yeah. And so, by the way, during the story of this horrible... horrible death.
Proletariat.
There you go. He's just telling all sorts of tales of this guy and how he went down with his ship and all this stuff. And Velma's just smiling through the whole story. And I'm a little scared that she's starting to, like, she's becoming the Harley Quinn to Fred's Joker.
Oh.
Like, he's starting to, like, brainwash her. And I'm scared. I'm very, very scared, Julie.
We need to keep an eye on her for the rest of the season. Maybe that's the arc of season one, is Velma slowly turning from innocent goody two shoes into evil villainous.
Velma's slow but steady descent into madness.
Right. And then she'll turn, if this was Buffyverse, she would turn into the great villain. Kind of,
she'd
like,
be the big bad for season two.
Right. I mean, I'm thinking like Allison Hannigan's, you know, twist. Okay. Whoa, there's a lot of, oh my gosh. Okay, I'm coming up with so many more theories. I'll save them for another episode. I've got enough dumb theories in this one. All right, so yeah, so before they hear this whole tragic story, they go and find this boat. Ebenezer Shark has this like vintage looking boat. It's a sailboat with the sails down, but with a, what do you call the boat steer thing?
Rudder?
No, like it looks like a big circle with spokes sticking out of it.
Oh, steering
wheel.
I almost said steering wheel. Yeah. the captain's wheel or something like that.
Yes. The captain's steering wheel. So it's like one of those kinds of boats. Okay. The boat wheel. Thank you. I'm glad we have the legit definition. Mm-hmm. I clearly studied the wrong stuff for this episode. Anyway, so there's a little hole to... Okay, so they go onto this boat. It's huge. I don't know how Ebenezer Shark can afford this because he doesn't really seem to work or anything. In fact, this whole episode, there's just tons of boats around. And they are either modern yachts or these very old-timey wooden, humongous sailboat kind of things. And there's nothing in between. So they go in and they talk to the local weirdo, Ebenezer Shark, and he's Scottish.
Wait, is he?
I think so, because he says, okay, wait, tell me what accent this is.
Oh, God.
Okay, so they visit Shark and they want to tell him about this ghost. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's definitely true. And they're like, why? And he says, I seen it with my own eyes the night he died.
I think it's more just like stereotypical pirate.
Oh.
Maybe. I think they're going for a pirate vibe. And I definitely wrote down at this point, never mind, it's not him, because they're clearly making him out to be the villain. And that means it's not him.
You're smarter than me. I was still thinking it was him the entire time. I am not good at picking these villains. Okay. So I don't know. Are all pirates Scottish in TV land, maybe?
Sure. I mean, okay, in the 60s, great. Everybody was Scottish.
Oh, right. Good point. Okay. Yeah. So he tells this story. I don't know. Can you rephrase this tragic story? I didn't quite get all of it.
I don't remember why the ship went down. It just stuck with me, the whole idea of the captain going down with the ship, and he was like never seen again until his ghost started appearing, and now boats are disappearing in the marina, and what do we do? And And Velma is just wickedly smiling.
Well, no, I mean, I can add one very important detail here, which is the reason his boat went down was one of these Johnny-come-lately yachts crashed into him.
Mm.
So it's one of those stories of the bourgeois or upper class crashing into the working man who is probably just out doing his job as a Navy captain or a fisherman or something like that. Working class proletariat brought down by absent-mindedness of the richer folks. And probably there was no pension or anything paid out to Widow Cutler because she is living in clear poverty.
Sure.
Because we find out he does have a wife. And so we get to meet Widow Cutler. So, before that happens, Scooby falls into the lower deck on the boat, and then a scuba suit falls on him. And that's why I was thinking, oh, it's definitely this dude Shark, because here's a scuba suit that looks just like the one we saw before, except it's not glowing. Clearly, this red herring didn't fool you, Steven. But
no, I was like, they're just misdirecting so hard. They're just like, oh, yeah, look, it's this dude.
I was like hook, line, and sinker bought into this because I was still just looking for clues to support my Marxist theory, I guess. So, yeah. And the dude says, my old diving suit. I don't know. I can't do this. My old. Anyway.
I'm just going to let you keep trying. I'm going to let you flail and just do this one.
Me
this is all you.
My old diving suit. No, that's a prospector.
There you go.
Okay, so Shark mentions Cutler has a wife, so they go to see Widow Cutler.
But before they do, Fred decides,
yes,
because they don't all go see Widow Cutler.
Oh, yeah.
Fred decides, hey, gang, let's split up. And he does the same thing he always does. He goes, hey, Velma, Shaggy, Scoob, y'all go off and y'all go see the widow. And so Fred and Daphne are off for love again, so take a drink.
Oh, yeah. Fred and Daphne were not along for this part of the adventure.
Nope. All for love.
Wow. You are so right. Okay. All right. I just thought maybe they wanted to save money on animation or something.
I mean, that's probably the case. I'm pretty sure they reused the same cells
six different
times during the show. So.
Oh, completely. Yeah. They just have stock footage that they like move on to the however cartooning happens. Okay. So they... they go see Widow Cutler. She lives in the old lighthouse. At this point in the episode, I'm thinking, by the end of season one, they're going to use up like all the creepy spots in this Florida Beijing town because they've already like done shipyards and different things. Okay, so she's in the old lighthouse.
Which they break into. So breaking and entering, take a drink.
Again, right. This is a super spooky place. And of course, they don't break it in. Or first, they're like, oh, let's knock. But no one wants to knock because that's too scary, apparently, touching the door. Even Scooby pretends that his paw is broken so that he doesn't have to knock. So instead of knocking, they just open the door and walk in.
Sure.
I was horrified. They walk in and they see, this is why I'm saying she's not getting a good pension or something, because she has a Bunsen burner cooking and a pot cooking over just an open fire. And that's how she's making her food and tea. Velma says she practices witchcraft, even though, again, I'm just thinking, no tea. Like,
yeah, it seems like we're jumping to a conclusion here.
Right. I mean, just because she has an open fire and a pot of water, not everyone has like a gas burner at their disposal, Velma. Learn something about the working class.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, then it turns out, no, I was wrong. It really is witchcraft. Because do you remember the book they found?
I don't remember the book they found. I remember the ingredients like Eye of Newt and Canned Hyena Laughs.
Oh, yeah, the Canned Hyena Laugh. When they opened that, it sounded exactly like the Phantom from the last episode.
I wonder if they use the same sound.
I wonder. Oh, Steven, I have a confession to make really quick.
What's that?
We did mix up the order of the episodes, and I'm sure listeners will write in at some point. This is actually the second episode, and Hassel in the Castle is actually the third, I think.
No, I did my research. It said that Hassel in the Castle came out. I looked at the release dates, the original 1967 release dates.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I beg your pardon, Stephen. Clearly you did do your research.
Do not question me.
either way, it's okay because there wasn't like a lot of plot development for like their general characters that like we need to worry about. It's not like listeners are going to be super confused no matter what order they watch these in.
Right.
But I mean, we'll still see Velma's slow descent into evil either way. Yes. Okay. I beg your pardon, Stephen. Okay. Anyway, the book. It's a gigantic book. Again, it's blue, just like the big blue key from last time. And it's called Witchcraft Made Easy.
Oh, yeah. And isn't that when Velma flips open the book and for some unknown, ungodly reason, she puts on this weird accent? And she goes, very interesting. Like, what is that?
I thought that was the old lady doing that.
No, that was Velma. She looked right at the camera and did it. And I was like, what? Who? I think she's starting to lose her mind.
She is losing touch with reality.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm she's. Sad. Yeah. Aw, Velma. There's so much potential there. Okay, so this is a huge book. All of a sudden, there's a hand on Velma's shoulder. She turns around, and it's a nice-looking old lady. She's not creepy at all. And the only creepy thing about her is that she doesn't seem to mind that two teenagers and a gigantic dog have broken into her house and are rooting through her stuff. So she just kind of handles that with aplomb.
I don't mind that. That happens here all the time. In fact, there's two teenagers and a dog rummaging through my stuff right now. Hey, you get out of here. Get out of here.
Don't let them open your canned hyena laugh.
God.
So they say Widow Cutler, and they explain that they were there to look into the death of her husband. Turns out there's a huge oil painting on the wall of Captain Cutler, and she says, it was me and my witchcraft that brought him back from his watery grave. And so
that's
she
love.
Just... Pardon?
That's love. I mean, that's true love.
Is it? He doesn't seem to have a very happy existence.
I mean, we don't know. Maybe well, having fun on the ocean floor.
Okay, fair enough. All right, I'll allow it. Yeah, she's very open with her witchcraft. So clearly she is a proud purveyor of mysteries here. Then Scooby drinks from her big cauldron, and he really likes it. It seems delicious to him. It's actually the wash. Ha ha ha. Okay, again, just more evidence that, you know, she's just using these cauldrons and things to do her chores. All right, next step, according to Velma, find the ghost. So the kids meet back up. And that's why I say she's really turning into kind of a Fred in this episode.
They all gather
back together. Oh, no, they're not gathered back together. It's just Scooby, Shaggy, and Velma. And they see what looks like a pile of glowing sludge kind of creeping towards a drain pipe. It made zero sense to me.
Right. And of course they chase after it, because why do they always chase after everything?
Attention span difficulties, I guess. Or they live in the most boring place in the world. It goes into drain pipe, and Shaggy wants to leave because Shaggy is smarter than Velma in this episode.
Yep.
But Velma indicates only Scooby can fit in this drain pipe, which is not true. She's way smaller than Scooby.
He's a great Dane.
He is a great, great Dane. Yeah, he's humongous. Ugh. And like dogs are not very good at like slithering, whereas humans, we're made for slithering, let me tell you. So she uses Scooby's snacks to try to convince Scoob to climb in. So I have another kind of sad theory here. You might want to cut this trigger warning for people who are like, you know, really, really love animals and don't want to hear about this kind of stuff.
Oh, no.
But yeah, I'm sorry. But in research that involves animal subjects, a lot of times scientists will keep them at 80 or 85% body weight so that they're food motivated in order to do their learning tasks. So like when you read about like rats learning how to do mazes and things, if the rat's fully fed, it's not going to be as motivated. Whereas if it's at 85% body weight, it will be. So I'm wondering if Fred is forcing them to keep Scooby at a lower body weight because he looks pretty slim.
I mean, I choose to believe that that's not true. He's filled out. It's just as that weight's in his chest.
Okay, fair enough.
And his legs. I'm gonna choose to believe that that's not true. That is something Fred would do.
Yeah.
But I just can't, come to terms with the fact that that would be something that anyone in the Hanna-Barbera universe would do.
All right. Yeah. You know what? Now that you mention it, Scooby does have a very nice hourglass figure.
He does. He does. I find myself strangely attracted to him.
Okay, well, weird. I'm glad to let that theory go. I'm still in love with my proletariat Marxist theory, but this one, you're right. And Shaggy wouldn't let this happen. He would happily forego meals to make sure Scoob got fed.
Of course.
Anyway, but Scoob does love Scooby snacks, and so he agrees to go in. And then he comes back out dragging a bit of the glowy stuff, and he and a mouse have a really funny battle over it because the mouse wants it too, apparently. It's not a human or anything. It's just some glowing seaweed. So here I'm just really hoping it's not radioactive again because Scooby had it in his snout mouth, and then Velma touches it too.
Can I just say snout mouth is my favorite term you use?
Well, thank you. I think you helped coin it last time because I was struggling between snout and mouth. So snout mouth, and it's like a real fuzzy one. Okay, so I'm glad you like it. It's. I'm hoping I can remember to keep saying it every time.
I hope so.
Yeah. So all the kids get together to look at this stuff. Now, do you remember how they figured out its origin? Because I don't. I was taking notes. I didn't know if they read it in a book or Velma.
Yeah,
just knew
they
it.
They opened up like an encyclopedia. To which, by the way, an encyclopedia is a book that we had before Wikipedia.
Oh, is that where the name Wikipedia? Or did encyclopedia come from the book name Wikipedia? Is that,
it's a book on paper. It's
weird.
It's very weird concept. But they open this up and they find out that this seaweed is some sort of phosphorus something, and it is only found here, wherever here is. So this one corner of Florida.
And it's only found in an area called the Graveyard of Ships.
Which, yeah, that seems plausible. Sure. Graveyard of Ships. I mean, okay. I live in North Carolina, where we literally have an area called the Graveyard of the Atlantic.
Really?
Which is all sunken ships, old sunken ships from the 1700s and 1800s. So, yeah.
Is it like, seriously?
Yeah, it is. So, like, I saw this, and, like, my first thought, because the next thing that happens, of course, they find out Graveyard of Ships. Well, let's go there.
Right.
And so they get on the ship, and they head to the Graveyard of Ships. And, like, I'm seeing it, and I'm like, yeah. I mean, my first thought was, like, this is ridiculous, Graveyard of Ships. And then I really thought about it. I'm like, well, we do have the Graveyard of Atlantic, and like Blackbeard's ship is sunk in there, and like all these other ships are kind of sunken because it was all these sandbars on the outer banks of North Carolina that the ships couldn't get past. And so, like, okay, plausible. All right.
Okay, does it look like this? Because the Graveyard of Ships in here, first of all, it's always cloudy and foggy, and it looks like it's nighttime, even when it's daytime, and you see masts and, like, hulls and things and other, insert boat terms, like, sticking out of the water.
Ahoy.
Ahoy.
Avast, ye scallywag. There we go. Those are boat terms.
Ooh,
there you
good. Go. I love it. All right. So in it, I don't know, there's at least 30 like old timey boats here, right?
Right. And they're all like half sticking out of the water.
Half sticking out of the water. But this is where Terry, my Scooby companion, pointed out to me the religious significance. Did you notice the, and this is where I'm talking about, if I get too offensive here, let me know. Did you notice the crucifixion reference?
Wait, what?
Okay, there are three crosses. They're like boat masts, but they are three crosses sticking out of the water, and the one in the middle is slightly higher. And apparently, that is a reference. Again, this is like my third. Okay, so this is like from Terry to me through my Jewish filter here.
I mean,
so
I see where this is going. But
okay, is this a thing you're familiar with where, like, apparently, when Jesus was killed, you know who Jesus is, right?
Yes.
Okay, when he was killed, there were two, like, robbers or, like, not such great guys on either side of him, and his cross was up higher a little bit, or it's depicted that way in
art. It's depicted that way in art, yeah.
It's depicted that way in art. That's what it looks like in the background here. We paused the frame. Yeah. Uh-huh. Now my stupid theory has some weight, right? Thank you, Julie Kinn.
Well. We'll get there.
Okay, okay. There's more evidence at the very end of the
question
episode.
Of, do you know who Jesus is? I told you I was raised Christian. I'm like, nope, whole time. Raised from like, I was raised from a baby in the church, but who's Jesus? Who's this Jesus guy you're talking about?
Oh, look, so there's probably people out there who consider themselves Christian who think Santa and Jesus are like the same person. No? Okay, maybe. All right, now I'm getting into offensive territory.
We need to abort.
Abort. Okay, moving on. All right. This is the manifest, or not manifest destiny, whatever it is that you said before. I'll get back
prosperity
to it.
Gospel.
Thank you. Prosperity gospel. I should write that down. And look it up. Okay, so all the kids get in diving suits, and the doggy gets in a diving suit. Which looks really cute. And his is a different color than theirs, which I guess to help us recognize which one's the dog, although it's kind of obvious because he's a dog.
I mean, they're all very – Fred is very excited about this part. He's – you know, as I always say, gang, onward and downward. Oh, no, all of your oxygen tanks are empty? Oh, what's happening? Oh, God, there was some sort of accident. Oh, no, I don't know where the bodies are. Oh, God, it was horrible. Like, that's how I imagine, like, Fred is imagining this is going to go.
Totally, because he leads them right to a cadaver.
This is a children's cartoon.
Yes, we see a dead body in this episode with decaying terrified. Hands. It was horrifying. Okay, before that happens, they do see a nice yacht, but they don't see any people in the yacht, and they don't see an engine going. It's just kind of running on ghost power, as one of them puts forward.
Velma said that, which is not like Velma.
Again, another Mulder comment from Velma, who should be playing a Scully. Okay, so then they see that yacht go into a cove. They don't. They're like, hey, that cove doesn't have any way out. What's that yacht going to do? Full speed ahead into a cove, and they don't hear any crashing noises. They go investigate. It's just a cove. The boat has disappeared due to somehow a scuba ghost. Okay, so it vanishes. Yeah, so then Fred, like you said, like he always says when he's killing his victims, onward is downward. So, you know, every good killer needs some catchphrases. They dive into the graveyard of ships. And now they're underwater.
And they split up.
yeah, they split up. I mean, is there anything that you'd like to describe about underwater? It just looks like you're underwater. Your average underwater scene with fish and pirate ships and dead bodies.
Yeah, it's the dead bodies that are it's interesting. Because they swim in and they're like, look at this guy. He's been down here for like 100 years. And I wrote down, all I know is I wrote down in my notes, look, one of Fred's victims.
Yeah.
That's all I wrote. Because Fred seemed to know exactly where this body was.
Exactly. And I disagree that he's been down there for 100 years. Because although his hands are, you can tell like his hands, like, sorry for using this word, look all shaggy. Yeah, I can't think of another word for like desiccating skin that's been in water too long. But like,
I think shaggy's a much more appealing term than desiccating skin. So
I need a creepy thesaurus. I'm so sorry, everybody, that you had to hear me say that. I'm feeling creeped out myself. But the body is sitting at a table. It's not floating or anything. If this body had been down there much longer, it would have decomposed. But we see its hands. I think it's only been dead for a few weeks at the most. And yeah, Fred is like, doo-doo-doo, I don't know, maybe we could look in here and see if there's anything interesting. Because, you know, serial killers like to go back and have the glory of watching other people be horrified by their victims. I think that's part of why they like to get involved in police investigations of their own crimes. Anyway, they get locked in with the dead body. And I think, is that where they get locked in?
Yes, because the creepy phosphorescent man comes and closes the door behind them.
Right. It's not Scooby and Shaggy. It's the other kids. And I'm not sure why this old boat had a metal hold, but it does. They're locked in there now. Scooby and Shaggy see the creepy ghost dude, and then Scooby tries to sacrifice himself to save Shaggy. He takes out his own oxygen pipe, puts it into his suit to make it all fluffy, allows Shaggy to use some sort of, like, pontoony? No, that's the wrong word. Like, spiky harpoon! Thank you. Harpoon, not pontoon. Harpoon to, like, poke him. Yes. And then Scooby floats all around really fast and knocks down the ghost. And then he's all better in the next scene.
Nothing about that gag is scientifically sound, by the way. Because I was writing that down. I'm like, he's just going to die.
Right.
And you can't just put the oxygen hose right back in the top of your head tank because now it's going to have water in it.
Yes. And how did he know how to aim himself right at the bad guy? And if he's a ghost, he wouldn't be corporeal.
Right. And so when he plugged it back in, I did write down, sure, that would still work.
Yeah.
And then he's flying around and they break through the metal keep door, which makes absolutely no sense to me.
Right.
They break through a lot of doors on this show. I've learned that. Doors are just flying off their hinges left and right. And it's in the water, too, with, like, how would that work with the space and that the water has the pressure pushing against the door? Yeah, I mean, he would break his neck.
Yeah, there's some concerns here. The rest of the episode is entirely plausible, but that one scene definitely concerns. I have in my notes, okay, he's better now because, you know, once his suit's back together, I'm like, I'll allow it. Whenever it's Scooby concerned, I'm like, sure, I want the doggy to be okay. But Scooby also finds a clue, which is good because otherwise this whole episode title, A Clue for Scooby-Doo, makes no sense.
Right.
Even though in every episode he finds a clue, but for whatever reason.
He does, in fact, find a roux. As he says,
yes.
And Daphne understands him this time. So I think we do have proof that they all understand him and or are all having some sort of like simultaneous hallucination.
Right. That shared. Pause for just a second while I try to remember. It's not ménage à deux. It's
ménage à trois.
No, it's something à deux. It means like shared delusion. For two or fois a deux. I don't remember what, but it's a very rare condition that happens where two or more people share the same delusion. Yes, so that could be happening. All right. Legit
so he
psychology
finds a roux.
Here. Okay, sorry. He finds a roux. And then they say zoinks because they see the glowing dude again. I liked hearing zoinks.
Of course.
Then Shaggy and Scooby find a loaded cannon with a fuse. And I was about to flip my lid if they lit a cannon underwater.
Oh,
but they can't
I would have lost my mind.
That is too far, Hanna-Barbera.
Exactly.
And I will not allow it. Then Shag and Scoob pretend to be the mermaid masts on the ship, but it's pretty cute. And Shaggy has his arms out like Jesus, but it doesn't work. The ghost follows them. Okay, that one's a stretch because, you know. Anyway, the ghost follows them. And then Scoob, somehow they lose the ghost again. I think that might be when they break down the door and
find I jumped the gun on that.
Oh, no, that's okay. It was very exciting.
It was.
And then Scooby finally brings the other kids to the clue he found. It's lots of scuba stuff, which I don't know why this is such a big clue.
I mean, I don't know. I think, no, nah, I got nothing. I don't know.
Okay. Maybe, I guess if they hadn't found scuba stuff, they would have all thought it really was a ghost, but only live humans need scuba gear.
Right.
And the ghost.
But they also found glowing footprints.
Right. That's a much bigger clue than scuba
stuff. My problem with the glowing footprints, though, is like, okay, so in the beginning of the episode, the water washed them away. Why is the water not washing them away underwater? Like, why are they still there?
Right. Yeah, they're underwater. They shouldn't be able to see those glowing footprints.
Nope.
Unless, did the glowing dude want them to follow them? No, that doesn't make sense either.
No.
Hmm.
It's coming apart at the seams, guys.
It's coming apart. Yeah. Sorry. Every other Scooby episode makes perfect sense, except this one. So the glowing footprints vanish right into the edge of a cliff. That makes no sense. The edge of a rock cove. And it's the same one where they previously saw the nice yacht disappear. So they're trying to figure this out. Shaggy is overwhelmed by all the events, including seeing a dead body earlier in the episode, and too much scuba diving can give you headaches and things. Anyway,
right.
He's probably dehydrated. He sits down on a rock, and the rock opens a passage into the side of the rock face.
Now, when he's sitting on the rock,
yes,
can too much scuba diving change your hair color? Because there is a literal 3-second moment where he is talking and his hair is like bleach blonde, like Fred blonde, which is not Shaggy's hair color. And the animators clearly were just like, nobody will notice.
We could go back in our QA, our quality assurance, and, you know, change this, but it's just stupid kids watching it. It's yeah, not exactly. Like a couple of bored adults are going to sit down and overanalyze this for,
nope, that'll
for
never happen.
Tens of listeners.
Oh, come on. It's at least 15s of listeners.
Okay, 15. We love our listeners. It doesn't matter how many we have. As long as there's a few other Scooby-obsessed folks out there, we'll keep doing this. Here is my question. Aside from the sudden change in hair color, how much do you think it costs to develop something like this without anyone in the city knowing? To take a rock face, carve it out, insert an invisible-looking door that can be deployed by a rock.
I mean, at least $12.
At least. Yes, definitely more than our allowance put together.
It's got to be expensive.
I would think so, and difficult. But
it
know,
opens up
okay.
This like weird, intense door that's heavy. So how much does the door cost? I don't know. But they're going to go through the door.
Yes, into a giant underground cavern.
Now, what they find there is very intriguing. But
what is it?
I don't know. Oh. Maybe we can tell people what they find there after a quick commercial break.
Okay. Yeah. No, that was a great segue. Sorry, I tried to ruin it. Perfect. Let's find out about some other podcasts.
Yeah.
Hey, this is The Tope, host of the Gravity Beard Podcast, a variety show with interviews and discussions on a wide range of topics. Our guests have included a viral YouTube star, a former child actor. We've even had a guy on who may have solved the D.B. Cooper case. It's a delicious box of audio chocolate. You never know what you'll get. Find it on Podbean, iTunes, and other places you listen to podcasts. It's the Gravity Beard Podcast. It's what your ears will want to be listening to.
Cool.
Yeah.
And we're back.
And we're back. Cool. So, Stephen, what's in the cavern?
It's all the yachts.
Fancy yachts.
Mm-hmm.
And they're being painted over and then presumably resold, although that's never explicitly stated. So, I kind of buy the thing up. Well, it's really expensive to make a hidden cavern because yachts are expensive, dude. You could resell those.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You got to have at least $200 to buy a yacht.
Yeah, totally. Way more than the $12 required to build the cavern.
Right.
And they immediately recognize the one they previously saw disappearing, and it's tied to a submarine. And they see the submarine kind of sticking out with a little chain attached to the boat, except the chain is attached to, like, the front. It's like the bow of the boat. So if it was actually pulling it, the boat would have probably capsized. But anyway, that's all right. I'm sure I just don't understand physics of boats. Yeah, so that's how the boats were secretly led into the cavern. Just in case anyone saw them, it would look like a ghost was taking it, but it's actually a submarine. All makes sense.
Sure.
And Fred said, just as we suspected.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, you knew all along, Fred, didn't you?
Yeah, I did not suspect that, so I was very impressed. I just assumed it was a ghost. Okay, so then they make a complicated trap. Do you want to take a shot at explaining how this works?
No.
I know I'm putting you on the spot.
It's so I know he ends up in a net at some point that he bounces off of. This has got to be like a running gag in our show by this point where you try to get me to explain some sort of either the plot or a trap, and I'm just like, I mean, something to do with... Okay, so they hook... I'm gonna go for this.
Okay.
They hook up a fire hose.
Yes.
With soap.
Yes.
And they're going to spray down the ramp as soon as the scuba underwater swimmy man...
Scuba dude.
...comes... There you go. Scuba dude. Scuba Steve. as soon as he comes in, they're going to spray it down so that he's... Oh, God. He's going to slip and slide and... I think fall into a boat, which will then shoot across the water and
into a net. Yeah, there was some, I don't remember exactly how that somehow there was going, he was going to become a human projectile.
Right.
Nothing can go wrong here. Except no. I think it might be Velma who said, I sure hope your contraption works. So someone is expressing mild doubt, but of course no one's assertive enough to say, hey, maybe there's a better way. Like, let's go get some grown-ups to help. Now that we've figured this out, let's escape with our lives. So anyway, there's whistles too.
Oh, yeah, because it's Operation Noisemaker.
Right.
Which is brilliant.
Brilliant. And so they deploy, I'll use the word deploy since it's an operation. They deploy all sorts of whistles, but like the old timey, like, hey, workers, time for a break kind of whistle that you have in a factory.
Right. It's the same bird from the Flintstones that tells them that it's time to be done at the quarry, except just in whistle form.
It's a living. And so, yeah, and tons of whistles, but there's more than just that one. There's all sorts of things. And so then we see the phosphorescent ghost be like, huh? And so then the hose starts up. But the hose, it's a firefighter's hose, like you said. So it's like really hard to hold. And they, stupid kids, turn it on at full strength. And then we see this extended long part of Shaggy riding on this hose, and it goes on for way longer than I would have expected, because they had to fit a lot of plot into this episode, and usually they slide over things like this very quickly. So right. I have two thoughts. Either one, whoever made this bit of animation just loved it, of Scooby riding this hose, or it's meant to express his hidden sexuality.
That's a place I didn't take it.
Oh, well, what do you think of when you see someone riding on a phallic writhing hose?
Well,
okay,
I don't
have to
see
answer
it often.
Oh.
That's not, I don't know what dark corners of the web you're on, but that's not typically something that I experience viewing, but now that you, I got to think about some stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's on the Tijuana Bible version of Scooby-Doo. Don't look that up at work. All right.
Yeah, don't know.
So, as happened in our last episode, despite their perfect trap and contraption, it deploys on Scooby instead of the bad guy. He gets all sudsy instead. And the kids are like mad at him. They're like, Scoob, which I thought was really unfair because he's just a puppy.
Right.
And he crashes. He is in the boat somehow. He winds up in the boat. It crashes right on top of Scooby-Doo's head. And poor
Scooby. He somehow lives.
Yes. Or maybe. We don't actually see him alive after this because it crashes over his head. They pull off his helmet expecting to see Ebenezer Shark. It's actually some dude they don't recognize. They grab a bit of seaweed, put it on the dead dude's face, and then they say, oh yeah, looks kind of like the Captain Cutler from the painting if he were still alive. Now, I am not convinced that this is not a corpse at this point.
Does he really not?
He doesn't say anything.
Oh, God.
Maybe his eyeballs move around, but that could just be the last remnants of his consciousness. His head went through a boat. He was wearing a helmet.
No.
Yeah, I mean, okay, I get it. He stole boats. That shouldn't be a death sentence. The morality in the show is questionable. All right, but maybe he's alive. So why don't we just pass along that? We'll just pretend that brain injuries don't exist.
He's alive!
Yay!
Yay.
It's not Ebenezer Shark. Shaggy is the one who actually figured it out this time.
Go Shaggy.
Yeah, I know. It's a paper. Or it was impressive. Sorry, I was reading ahead because the next day in the paper, we immediately cut to daytime again at the Shake Shack or the malt shop. In the paper, it says teenage sleuths solve mystery, which.
Now, did you read the rest of the story?
No.
The headline, teenage sleuths solve mystery.
Uh-huh.
Rest of the story is written entirely in hieroglyphics.
No, what?
Yep, if you go back and look, none of that's English. It's all like symbols and pictures. It's like they were like, nobody will notice. Again, like, who's going to be watching this, like, analytically?
just a bunch of illiterate children.
So now I'm wondering if this is all taking place in some sort of time warp in ancient Egypt.
Oh my gosh, I'm making a note of that. We should look for clues for that next time. Mm-hmm.
That... There's a mummy at some point. There's got to be. So.
Yes. Oh, there is. There definitely is. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay, sorry. Mind warp here. All right. So there's no mention of how they likely killed the bad guy, and no mention about how the libel suit from when they were maligning Ebenezer Shark. They're just all happy-go-lucky having shakes. This time, everyone has their own shake glass. So that's seemingly good. We're about to get back to the final clue that I was mentioning before about God's intervention here. If you assume Christianity is truth, etc., blah, blah, blah. Okay, so while they're explaining this entire complicated plot, you're able to, if you choose, ignore all of those details and just watch Scooby's adorable antics. Because what he does is uses his opposable furry thumbs to make a funky little straw so that he can steal Shaggy's shake while he's drinking his own. It's pretty funny. And
I have done this.
Have you really?
Yeah, I've put a couple straws together and like reached across a table with it and been like, yep, this is mine now.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm going to try it later tonight. It'll be a fun experiment with my kids.
Do it.
So after they're done talking, they all watch. So they all see that Scooby's done this. Ha ha ha, Scoob. But then all of a sudden, everyone else's shakes slowly disappear.
Magic.
Right? Scooby's grinning. And Fred says, well, that's another mystery. Or is this evidence that there is magic in this world, but that the only magic that exists is the magic from God and Christ?
All right. I think you might be reaching here.
All right. Maybe. Okay. So then let's go back to something a little bit more concrete. Here's something I can't figure out. Did Cutler deliberately try to look like a glowing dude to convince everyone that there's a ghost? Or was that an accident because he happened to be walking through the phosphorescent seaweed that only grows in graveyard of ships?
I don't know. I feel like if you make yourself all glowy, I mean, people are going to be less liable to ask questions. They're going to be like, oh, yeah, creepy ghost. Don't want to mess with that. I mean, sane people are not going to follow a ghostly ghostly diver into the water.
Okay.
Now, others like the gang,
right.
A little different.
Okay. Well, you know, this has been probably the first and last of our religious episodes. I'm hoping not to keep returning because I know I'm on super thin ice. And
well, I know that you probably, it all stemmed from that part where the ghost actually does walk on the water. Across the... No, he doesn't. I'm just making that up.
Jeez, I'm so gullible, Stephen. Seriously. It sounds like something that could happen in the show.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure at some point in this show, they're running and their legs are spinning and they just run across the top of the water. You know that happens.
Yes.
It happens in cartoons all the time.
Are you ready for one more, like, super religious Christian thing?
Sure.
Okay. I know I asked you that in a way where, like, you can't really get out of it, but...
Yeah, there's no way out.
No, there isn't. Every week, we have questions from meddling kids. In this week's question, total coincidence, okay? This week's question comes from meddling kid Christina A. She says, I've heard that a lot of iconic television characters represent the seven deadly sins. Do you think the Scooby Gang fits?
Shaggy's gluttony.
Okay.
Clearly. Velma is pride.
That's what I wrote down too for Velma.
Fred is mass murder. That's one of the seven deadly sins,
right? I
think so. I don't know.
Well, there's wrath.
That's
what I wrote down for Fred. I had to look these up because I didn't know them offhand.
Daphne is... I'm going to take it to a weird place. Daphne's lust?
That's what I wrote down too, even though she doesn't act it. I mean, she can't help that she looks like that and that she fits society's desire, right? I suppose maybe she inspires lust, but I don't know. To me, that's just kind of blaming the victim, but it's the closest I could come up with.
And then Scooby... Envy? Well, I don't know. I'm trying to think of another one.
Okay, here's what I've got. Okay, so let me remind you of the seven deadly sins first and remind our listeners. Right. And inform the listeners like me who didn't know all these. Because I was going, I knew like lust and gluttony, and then I was like sneezy, but that was not one of them. Okay, it's lust, gluttony, greed, sloth, wrath, envy, and pride. So the easy ones to me were like, I actually put Scooby as gluttony because he always wants... Scooby or Shag can both be gluttony, but sloth I put Shaggy because...
Yeah, I was going to say those are interchangeable almost.
Yeah. Unless you interpret sloth as like tree sloths because those are cute and then it would be Scooby.
No.
Wrath, the closest I could come up with was Fred. Pride, I put Velma too because she's always like, I read books. But I don't know. Also, all of these are a stretch, Christina A., by the way. So even though we're jumping into this task that you gave us, I don't know that I buy it as much as I buy the stupid theories I was putting out in this episode. But okay, then...
I don't know that I buy anything.
Okay. Okay, greed can be the villains. And then guess who envy is?
All of our listeners, because they don't get to record this awesome podcast every week, right? No?
I was going to say Scrappy.
Oh, no, Scrappy's just an abomination. We'll get into Scrappy eventually. Scrappy will come around, but I have a hard time with Scrappy.
It sounds like we're going to have a lot of emotion in subsequent seasons. I can't wait.
Yes.
Okay, if you have a meddling question, or if you just want to let us know your feelings and theories about this series, please email us at meddlingkidspod@gmail.com. Or you can tweet at us at meddlingkidspod or join us on Facebook.
And just a disclaimer, no religious offense was meant.
Oh my gosh,
by
none
any of this.
At all.
So like nobody come at us and be like, "Well, actually, no, not what we were going for. Just some ha-has."
Yeah, I mean,
not belittling any religions.
Absolutely not. I think religions are really fascinating and I hope I was coming at it from an academic perspective, but
oh, I studied them in college, so I definitely think they're fascinating.
But if we got something wrong, please feel free to email Stephen all about it. You can email us. I would be thrilled to hear about it. And I do apologize if I handled these important topics too lightly.
No, absolutely. Well, with that being said,
yes.
Thanks for joining us on the Meddling Kids podcast. We want to say thanks also to Dave Sezte, I'm never sure if I'm saying right.
I think you are.
But I hope I am, for the use of the song Night Surfing as our theme music. Be sure to check out our other shows as well. I do Is This Adulting. It is a mental health comedy podcast, if you can believe that. But it's a lot of fun.
Believe it, folks. It's awesome. And I do the Station Wagon podcast with my not so smelly brother, Mark. And it's a science and history comedy show. And we'll be back next time with episode 4. A great pun here, everyone. Mine your own business.
Oh, I bet that has to do with some sort of like gold mine.
I hope so. In the meantime, you can rate us and subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get podcasts.
Awesome. That's going to do it for us here this week on Meddling Kids Podcast. And I don't know what you did this week, but you would have gotten away with it if it weren't for us meddling kids.
Have a hair-raising day.
Ooh.
That's a nice
one. It's different every time, and I love it.
Yeah, I've been trying. I'm going to run out of words soon, so then we'll get real weird.